You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
As we head into the All-Star break, a lot of teams in the West divisions are just trying to solidify things and maybe jump into a race, while some of the more dominant teams, of course, are trying to maintain their spots at the top of their divisions. I'm Allison Footer. Let's talk to the reporters about what is going on in the AL and NL West.
Richard Justice, our special guest, subbing for the vacationing Brian McTaggart, so we're thrilled for him that he's not here working. Okay, so Richard, let's talk about where the Astros are right now. We have a few days till the All-Star break, and it looks like everything is working just fine for them. Would you say that?
I spend a lot of time looking at that. Like, who's better in the American League than the Rangers?
Astros.
I mean, than the Astros. The Rangers are taking on water. They've got three starting pitchers on the disabled list. Seattle's got some issues. You look at the American League East, Baltimore's pitching's a mess. Boston is looking for both bullpen and starting pitching help. The other teams, I mean, Toronto potentially could be good. Cleveland's good. Cleveland's starting pitching's good. I don't know if their lineup's as good as Houston's, but the rest of the league knows. So today, as we sit here, and seasons go, seasons evolve, they go in waves. The Astros have some players that are feast or famine. Valbuena can carry a team for a month, and he can really struggle for a month. Rasmus has done that in the past. But as we sit here today, there's not a better team than the Astros. Would you like another starting pitcher? You would like another starting pitcher. Would you like, you know, more consistency from left field? Yes, you would. But we're in a season where 20 teams, 22 teams still think they can go to the postseason. They all see themselves as a three to five game win streak away from holding control in their own destiny. So right now the Astros could not be feeling better about where they are, especially when you think about where they came from. And let me just say this about that as I'm rattling on. They were 7-17 and 17-28. I have covered many teams that they would have quit. And I think part of it is the manager, A.J. Hinch, sets a good tone every day. I think the coaching staff is very good. And I think when you have young guys like Springer and Altuve and Correa, every day is a new day. They still like being here. They haven't been beaten down by the game. They haven't gotten cynical. They're not pissed off about their money or anything else. They like playing baseball. And, you know, you and I have been doing this a while. This is as entertaining a team to watch as any of I've seen. If you don't want to spend your money to see Springer and Altuve and Correa play, then you just don't like baseball.
Yeah, when you say those three guys, it would be absolutely ridiculous for them to have let any kind of losing early affect them. If you know not only the way they play, but just their personality. So you've got Correa, who's as cool as a cat. Now Altuve is constantly having fun, and Springer, I mean, he's like a little kid out there, and he just can't wait. So these guys can't wait to play baseball. Even when they lose, it's really not a big deal, right?
There was a moment last season where A.J. Hinch went out to argue with an umpire about some issue that seemed irrelevant. But on the first day of spring training, he told them, everything matters. Everything matters. The base you throw to, what base you take, the pitch you make, meaning think about everything you do, because at the end of the season, everything stacks up. And it was good, because when they went into a tailspin in August and September, he told them, I've told you guys from the beginning, it's 6 months, and you have to keep playing. And the players were impressed that night. He went out to the umpire, and they came back and says, really, you do believe everything matters? And I think that when you set a tone like that, like, yesterday doesn't matter, tomorrow doesn't matter, just show up and play today. And I again think it's a lot of it is the enthusiasm of youth, and also having a guy like Altuve who feels every day, maybe this is his background, being told no, having to overcome doubts and all that, or whatever. Could be just who he is. Like, the guy considers it a privilege to put on the uniform and play every day. You know, we've talked to A.J. Hinch many times, like, you got to give him a day off. Yeah, well, you go tell him he's going to get a day off, because he doesn't like it.
And that day that they wanted to give him off, he had like 4 hits, and he basically won the game for the Astros. So no more days off for Jose Altuve is the moral of that story. Okay, so now we're going to pretend that the Astros need to improve. And eventually this season we will be talking about them needing to improve. So Alex Bregman he was promoted from AA to AAA. He is a shortstop being someday converted to a third baseman. And all he does is hit. So he's had absolutely no issues whatsoever since making the transition to AAA, and everyone wants him here. Now the question is, do you bring him up when you don't really need him, when the team is doing well as it is now? Or do you wait until the team loses six or seven in a row and then they want to shake things up and then you put all this pressure on the kid? And is that the healthiest environment? Because he will have struggles offensively when he first comes up. They all do. What's the answer?
Well, Jeff Luno is not a patient person, but he's been amazingly patient in this thing. Like, there was a month ago, you and I were probably asking him, are you going to release Luis Valbuena? Are you going to release Carlos Gomez? And I remember he said about Valbuena, okay, he's struggling now, but his track record says he's the kind of guy that can carry us for a month. And I think what he's done, what Jeff Luno's done with the young guys, is there seems to be a process. Tyler White got the first crack at it. Colin Moran got a crack at it. A.J. Reed's getting a crack at it now. And he also pretty fanatical about wanting guys to play at every level. I wonder when Alex Bregman is going to play a position other than short. He's played a few games at third at AA, but nothing to get comfortable. And I think the way the Astros look at it, and that's the way other organizations do, a lot of teams like to draft 10 shortstops, because if you can play shortstop at college or in high school, there's a good chance you can play other positions. So I think the way they look at it is, we're going to see where our need is. If our need is in left field, Alex Bregman may end up there. If our need is at third base, Valbuena could play first. A.J. Reed may get hot. Anything like that. So I think it's just, you're going to just leave the options open. But will Alex Bregman contribute to the Astros at some point this year? No question. And I know all the fans are fanatic about it. We got to do this. We got to get the guy up here right now and all that. But it's not broken, so don't run it out and fix it yet. Valbuena, Rasmus, all these guys that, you know, you would be impacting their playing time. They contributed to a playoff team last year.
So let's look ahead at the starting rotation moving forward. And I think that, you know, we're in agreement that they could use a little help there. But just because, you know, you don't know if Lance McCullers is going to need to be, if they're going to need to scale back on him a little bit, or what's going to happen there. Okay, so Michael Feliz is like this huge asset, and it's unlikely that he would be really put in the rotation this year, right? But we could look towards spring training next year and think, here's probably a legitimate starting candidate.
Yeah, you and Mr. Hinch had a good conversation about that, and the point AJ was making, how valuable is he right now in this role? He can take the ball for an inning today or three innings today, and he makes hitters uncomfortable. He's a high-end, high-quality stuff pitcher. So I would think that he is so valuable in this role. And also, when you look at the rotation right now, okay, who would you take out? My opinion is McHugh and Keuchel are such smart guys, they'll figure it out, that they will get going. And in fact, I think McHugh has three straight quality starts. You can make the case he has figured it out. Fister's been very good. Fires has been, came here, he has been exactly what he came here purported to be, a quality starting pitcher. So are they going to go out and try to get a starting pitcher? I would imagine they would. But you got to be careful, you know, about how many prospects can you trade? They have a lot of prospects. If it meant going to the World Series, they would trade every guy in the farm system without hesitation. But I don't know. There's going to be a bidding war for Drew Pomeranz, for Jake Odorizzi.
I'm looking at their overall record. They're 53-33, and it's like, how can I sit here and ask him about what's wrong with the Rangers? But at the same time, they have had they've been stumbling a little bit, right? I mean, I was looking at the schedule, thinking, oh, this could be a nice stretch for them, and it really hasn't turned out quite probably how they had it mapped out. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, Allison. I mean, the injuries to the starting rotation are showing up big time. I mean, when you lose Yu Darvish, Colby Lewis, who was their best pitcher in the first half, and Derek Collins, you know that's three big blows right there, and you're seeing it. I mean, you know, A.J. Griffin's done okay, but Chichi Gonzalez and Nick Martinez, you know, they've struggled a little bit. They've had some good moments and some bad moments, but, you know, they're missing their starting pitching, and, you know, it's going to be a while before they get him back, because Darvish still needs at least two more rehab starts, and Derek Holland hasn't even started throwing again, and Colby's not going to be back till September. So, you know, they got to figure out what this rotation is going to do, whether they have to make a trade or, you know, they have to call up Kyle Loesch from AAA, which would seem to be something they really ought to consider. I mean, they got to figure out a way to, you know, get this rotation smoothed out.
Yeah, I would think the way they're looking at it is like they're giving a lot of guys some auditions. But, that I mean, these sometimes, and we've seen this happen before just through baseball through the years. Like, you bring a guy, you see, you know, what he's got, and you can maybe even get, like, three starts out of him, and then teams might start figuring him out a little bit. But they, it's not, they're not in the business of, like, putting a guy in there, and if he doesn't perform, like, keeping him in there. I mean, they really can't do that.
Well, these aren't auditions. I mean, Nick Martinez and Chichi Gonzalez have been here the last two or three years. I mean, they've auditioned before. You know, it's time to take the stage and do it or don't. I mean, I don't know how many more chances, you know, you can give them. I mean, they're good pitchers. They've got talent. They know how to win. They've been successful at the big leagues. But right now, it's been a struggle for both of them.
Yeah. I mean, they are 6-7 in the last 2 weeks, which is not, it's not great, but it's hovering right around 500. And I thought, well, I mean, you know, staying above water at this point is what they need to do. But I do want to talk about Ian Desmond. You know, it's he's an all-star, and people are talking about him being a very, very viable American League MVP candidate. Of course, we're only halfway through the season. And besides the fact that his numbers are fantastic, 320 average, as we're recording this, 20 doubles, 15 homers. But he wasn't even, I mean, it's, he signed during spring training when they had to convince him to move to the outfield. So they could not have seen this coming. Did they really have these kind of expectations when they signed him?
Well, I mean, this guy, Allison didn't sign until March 1st, so a lot of people overlooked this guy. And I, you know, he was in the National League, so I didn't get to see him play that much. But I'm sitting there going, what were you guys missing on this guy? And this guy's a fabulous player. He's a great athlete. He knows how to play the game. He's very smart, has a great baseball aptitude. I mean, he's doing all the things well. I don't know, you know, I know he played shortstop, and I've never seen him play shortstop that much, but, you know, in the outfield, he's been outstanding. I mean, this guy's just been a great all-around player, and, you know, there's a lot of people who swung and missed this offseason. I know the Cubs did a great job getting Dexter Fowler, and I know those are the last two guys standing in the free agent market this year, but this guy has been just tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite a position switch to spend 7 years as a shortstop to moving to the outfield in a completely different league. It is remarkable. They end the first half of the season with four against the Twins, and I do have confidence that they're going to have a pretty good series. And then after the break, they start up on a road trip with the Cubs, the Angels, the Royals, so things do not get that much easier. As you look back at the first half of the season, is there some, maybe it is Ian Desmond? Is there like somebody like who would be the biggest surprise? Somebody who might have over like performed a little bit better than anyone thought. Somebody who has really emerged and helped the Rangers have, you know, be 20 games over 500 at this point.
Well, you know, we've talked about Desmond, so let's look at a couple rookies. Matt Bush has really helped the bullpen big time, and Nomar Mazar has done a terrific job in the outfield. I mean, those two guys have really been a big boost to this team. And I don't know if this is a surprise or not, but Sam Dyson stepping into the closer's role when Sean Tolleson struggled, that's been a big boost for them. And, you know, Tony Barnett has done a nice job as a reliever. And the catchers, you know, the catchers continue to just do a really nice job behind the plate, the rotation. You know, they've had Robinson Chirinos, Brian Holiday, Bobby Wilson, and can't even forget Brett Nicholas. So I think the catching has been, you know, if you talk about surprises, just, you know, how well their catching has been, and it's kind of muted the old Jonathan LaCroix talk.
Greg, obviously it's been a struggle for the Mariners, and I was watching, of course, the Mariners were just here in Houston, where I am based, and Taijuan Walker has came down with some foot problems again. So he's on the shelf again. So why don't you tell us what led up to that and what the prognosis is for him?
Yeah, it's another blow to that rotation, which has really been a big storyline for them here in the last month or so. But, yeah, Taijuan's gone on the DL. He's going to a specialist in North Carolina Sunday to have that foot checked out. They're just trying to figure out, you know, what's going on in there. They think it's just tendonitis, and it's just painful when he pushes off on that thing. And it's hard to throw 100 pitches in a game when your foot's hurting like crazy every time you push off. So he's tried to get through it, but, you know, he gets further into the game, the ball starts to get up a little on him. He's just not driving down on it as well as he can, and gave up three homers to the Astros his last start there. And they said, hey, this obviously isn't working. He's not quite right. We need to figure it out. So they're going to send him to a specialist, sit him down for a little bit. They do have the All-Star break, as you mentioned, and try to try to give him a little time here as well. But he sat out for 10 days, came back and started, had a pretty good start against Baltimore, but, you know, said it hurt then as well, but came out his next start and kept hurting, just not getting better and not seeing the results they want. So, yeah, put him on the shelf along with Felix. That's two pretty good pitchers out of the rotation. So that rotation definitely a different look to it than what they started the season. And it's definitely making a factor here as they hit the break.
Yeah, when you were watching Walker pitch, I mean, were you thinking like, okay, this is just unusual. There's got to be something not right, or just think like maybe he was just having a bad outing. I mean, it just seemed like, I don't know, uncharacteristic of him for that one really bad inning that he had.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've talked to him enough over the last. It's been this is the fourth or fifth start in a row that he's fought it, and having talked to him and kind of knowing what he's dealing with, that, you know, I can see it, and I know the trainers and the manager can see it too. They had it checked out and believe it's not a structural issue that's not going to hurt it more, but he's just not able to get enough push off that to you know, be effective, as effective as he can be. I mean, he's still throwing pretty hard. He's a big, strong kid, and he's able to get the ball up there pretty good, but he's not driving it down. He's not able to do it things he normally can. And you know, when you're not right, you know, it's tough to send a guy out there against the best players in baseball and you get those kind of results. So he's frustrated. He's a kid who wants to make it happen. He's doing everything he can, and he's not quite, you know, he was so good at the start of the season, and he's such a big part of what they want in the future. I think they just want to be careful with him and make sure they're not doing anything wrong. And certainly at this point, if he's not helping himself or the team, they're going to set him down and see what they can figure out.
Yeah, and I guess on a positive note, Felix Hernandez, while the team was in Houston, he threw a 45-pitch, three-inning simulated game at Minute Maid Park and declared himself ready for the next step. Has the team declared him ready for the next step? And when sometimes there's a difference of opinion on that. I'm assuming everyone's on the same page, but what is the next step for him?
Yeah, it's funny because Scott Servais has said from the start Felix would pitch tomorrow if it was up to him, but he knows. He went out, he did look good. The simulated game doesn't show you a whole lot, but it tells a lot to the pitcher, and he felt very good, said his stuff was very sharp. And had no problems at all with his calf. So he's online to start this Sunday in Everett, Class A Everett, because AAA Tacoma is out of town. So he'll pitch in Everett. And then 5 days later on the 15th, he'll pitch for Tacoma. And on July 20th, big day, big red circle on Mariners' calendars, and certainly Felix's calendar, he'll be back on the mound, as hoped at this point anyway, against the Chicago White Sox. So he'll have been out for almost 2 months at that point. So that's the longest he's ever been on the DL. He's never been on for more than 2 weeks in his life. And it's been since 2008 he was even out at all. So this is very unusual. He's just chomping at the bit to get back out there, and it'll be interesting. You know, I was talking to him after he threw. He said his arm feels fresh. He's not used to having a break in the middle of the season. Now, this guy rolls out 200 innings, you know, every year for the last 10 years, and here he is getting an unusual break on his arm. His arm's not the problem. It was the calf. So, you know, he's been able to keep the arm good, but really kind of take a break. And so it'll be interesting to see how he comes out of that also, and see what he does look like with a different approach to a season than Felix has ever had.
Alden, okay, 21-2 win over the Boston Red Sox in Boston. I don't even know where to start with that. I guess when in the really, really big innings when this was going on, like what were you thinking? Like they were scoring a season's worth of runs in one game?
Allison, you have to understand, I've been following this team all year, and it's been a miserable season so far.
Yeah.
And there hasn't been much to get excited about if you're an Angels fan, aside from every time Mike Trout comes to bat or any time a ball is hit in the general vicinity of Andrelton Simmons. So, I mean, a night like Saturday was just kind of the last thing that you foresaw with this team. But, you know, I think it was, I think I can identify the moment when I was like, what is going on here? And it was probably when Carlos Perez, who doesn't hit the ball hard very often, smoked the ball not only over the Green Monster in Fenway Park, but he kind of hit the advertisement that sits well beyond the Fenway Park seats. It kind of bounced
yes.
off it. Carlos Perez. And at that moment, I was like, what is this? They scored 11 runs in the seventh inning. They scored 21 runs for the game. And look, I mean, people always talk about, oh, will it carry over? Can they build off of this? That doesn't really exist in baseball. They lost the next 8-10-5. and then they lost again on Monday in Tropicana Field. But as you mentioned, for a team that had so many things go wrong this year, you know, it's nice for them to just have a night like that when it was just fun.
Yeah, I mean, they were already ahead by a lot. So 5, 6, 7, 8. So they were up like 9-1 before they exploded with that 11-run seventh. Yeah, even Mike Socha, who's, you know, not exactly the most emotional guy that I've ever come in contact with in baseball, he even said, like, well, yes, that was very fun, which was about as far as he was going to take it. And like you said, I mean, there is no momentum in baseball. Your moment, it's an old cliche, but you're only as good as your next day starting pitcher. That will always be the case. But it was nice to see that the guys were having some fun with this, including my favorite guy, Hector Santiago, who apparently had a good luck charm of some sort on his spike. So tell us about that.
Allison, I knew you were going to take it in this direction, so I just tried to pave the way for you here. Hector is, as you know, he's a character. He's one of the more interesting guys in that clubhouse, one of the more congenial guys in that clubhouse. He does some wacky things from time to time. He'll, you know, sometimes shave his head in a weird manner or get all sorts of tattoos all over his body, or sometimes he'll just spray paint. He'll airbrush his cleats, and, you know, he did it for the 4th of July. And, you know, a couple of weeks earlier, I want to say sometime around mid-June when the Angels were really struggling, he thought, man, you know, I got to do something to, you know, kind of break up the monotony in here. I got to bring some good luck to the Angels. And, you know, his mind works in very interesting ways. He's got a buddy in Jersey, back where he lives, who kind of does this. He airbrushes cleats. So he kind of sent him his New Balance cleats. And he had him airbrush the Rally Monkey on his left shoe, on the inside of his left shoe. And I don't know if you saw the picture, but I posted it on Twitter that night, and it looks actually really good. They did a really good job. And, you know, as fate would have it, those cleats were done, and they were delivered to Hector Santiago's hotel the morning before his Saturday start, and he pitched with them. And he sat in the dugout with those shoes on while the Angels scored 11 runs in the seventh inning. And, you know, it was actually pretty funny. He shared a conversation with us that he had. He was sitting in one of the top benches with Jolys Chacín and Daniel Nava. And, you know, at one point, you know, when they were going crazy, he told them not to move. But then at another point, he kind of turned to Daniel Nava and he's like, check this out, man. He lifted up his pant leg and he showed him the Rally Monkey. And then I think it all made sense to everybody, Allison, why they were scoring 21 runs. They had a Rally Monkey in their cleat, Allison. I mean, that explains everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would think so. I would think that is the Rally Monkey still on his cleat is what I want to know.
He still has them. I think he's going to pitch with them again. For some weird reason, that Rally Monkey did not work on Sunday or Monday. But maybe it's the kind of thing that only works when he pitches. And you know what? We'll find out on Thursday, right?
Absolutely. I can't wait to I really cannot wait to see the outcome of that.
The question is, what else will he airbrush on his cleats when the Rally Monkey no longer works? I feel like this is a thing he's just going to keep doing.
Yeah, well, maybe it'll be like the Rally Socha or something, you know, like an offshoot.
That'd be
of
great.
The Rally Monkey. Yes. Oh,
that would be nice.
Okay, so I want to ask you three questions about the crowd-related questions. So in most cities, I mean, the Red Sox are unique in that they – fill the ballpark every night, whether they're having a good season or the bad season. People come out to cheer them, come out to boom when they're not doing well, but they're very, very passionate. So I would like to know a few things. What was the crowd's reaction during the seventh inning when those 11 runs were being scored? Was it just like constant angst? Was there booing? Was there indifference? Like, what was happening? Do you remember?
I want to say it was mostly sarcasm. Okay. They kind of they were already out of it. And I think they were already kind of, you know, they kind of let go of the outcome of that game when that seventh inning began, and it just became really sarcastic. It actually was – I felt kind of bad for the guy who was pitching. I think it was Pat Light, who had a really brutal inning, and there was somebody else who came in relief that inning too. But anytime they threw a strike or they got a routine out, there was like this boisterous, loud applause. So it's kind of funny. They were just being sarcastic with it. And then, yeah, there were the boos when they came off the field, really, really loud boos. But for the most part, I think Boston was very sarcastic that night.
Jane, I don't know. I'm trying to figure these guys out. I said this exact same thing to you last week. Okay, so they take 2 of 3 over the Angels, 3 of 4 against the San Francisco Giants. oh my goodness, they're turning a corner, and then they're swept by the Pirates, and they are they have split the three-game series so far with the Twins. They are currently playing as we're recording this. So it's almost like three steps forward and eight steps back, it feels. I can imagine that's got to be frustrating for them, too.
Yeah, and I feel like we've kind of talked about the same thing, you know, so many times already this year. And I know that, you know, the players are obviously aware of it. They know how streaky they've been, and that's why, you know, they try not to get too high when they are on those winning streaks, but obviously, you know, not get too low when they're down either. It's just been such a struggle for them to play consistent baseball, you know, just when, especially too, you know, just when you think they're getting healthy, they have two key relievers go down, Sean Doolittle and Fernando Rodriguez are both shut down from throwing for now with shoulder issues. And, you know, to that point, they had really finally regained full strength. They got Josh Reddick back, Sean Manaea, Rich Hill, and they were excited about, you know, maybe going on a little run ahead of the break and taking that momentum into the second half and, you know, really trying to make a case to keep this team together ahead of the trade deadline. So I know it's been really frustrating for them. It just seems that, you know, these streaky ways just won't end.
Yeah, I mean, that happens with a team that, quite frankly, is just not that great of a team. Like you said, there's a lot of guys that are coming back, but they seem to also have some injury issues. And those are the things that are going to happen. They've got some really talented players, which is why they do have good streaks. But there's been some bullpen issues. So some guys have gone on the DL. There have been some promotions. Has there been a shakeup recently, a lot of shifting there?
Yeah, and this was kind of the one area where, you know, the first couple months of the season, they really didn't have to think about it. It was such a, you know, a solid core. They were performing well. They were healthy. Now you're seeing a couple, you know, injuries. You have a guy like John Axford struggling. But then on the other hand, you know, it's worth noting now just what Ryan Dole's been doing. I mean, it's pretty remarkable, you know, straining all 36 inherited runners. And I know that everyone around the club really, really hopes that he would be named an all-star yesterday. And I think that, you know, they're still holding out hope that, you know, he can make it in there. Obviously now, you know, the way all-star rosters are, you know, several guys are added ahead of the game. And the A's are hoping that Dole does make it there because, I mean, what he's doing is just, it's kind of incredible. You know, you don't really look at that stat. It's not the first thing you look at with relievers. You know, I know that, you know, you look at stat or saves and ERA. Those are just kind of the easy ones to glance at. But, I mean, with inherited runners, you know, it means that this guy is coming in and, you know, pretty much saving runs for the starters. And he's been doing it with such ease and just kind of been, I mean, just so reliable, and that one guy that the A's can, you know, have such confidence in when they throw him out there. So he's been just as important as, you know, the guys in at the back end of the bullpen, guys like Doolittle and Ryan Matson.
Yeah, that, you raised a good point. I read that article that you had written about that it's not like the sexiest stat, but, you know, and I'm going to sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but that is a stat that is a regular, has a regular presence in, like, the daily game notes that the team puts out, and that's been for years, and I do sort of feel like that one has gotten pushed out as, like, we're the more analytical stats that we're all just, like, still trying to learn all the names to have sort of pushed their way into more of the, like, the public eye. But inherited runners and the fact that none have scored, I mean, it not only shows, of course, that he's a very good pitcher, but there's a mental aspect to this game. There's a mental aspect to being a reliever. Not everybody can come in and not be intimidated by situations like that. So it really shows that he's got it from kind of both sides of the game in that way.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's one thing to come in to a clean inning, but when you're constantly coming in sticky situations like that, you know, staying calm, cool, collected, he really shows zero emotion. And, I mean, he's very quiet to begin with, more of a shy guy. And, I mean, both on and off the field, you know, I asked a couple of relievers the other day, you know, what is he like in the bullpen during games? You know, is he maybe sneaky, funny, chatty? And they're like, no, he's just as quiet as, you know, you see him. But I know that, you know, Ryan said, you know, it's not like he doesn't have a heartbeat out there. I mean, he gets fired up, but he was just kind of always taught to play the game with no emotions. And, you know, you look around the game, and I'm sure some of the best players out there will tell you that that's, you know, just as important as talent.